in the Smart Choice Windows and More studio. It is Rodney McLeod, ladies and gentlemen. It is time to spill tea. I've never said that term before. I feel weird saying it, but I'm going to say it right now. Rodney McLeod about to go scorched earth in this studio. Hello.
What's going on? How y'all doing this morning?
I'm good. I wanted to text you before the game. I decided not to.
Why not?
I didn't want to bother you. I don't know.
Why?
I was like, I just wanted you to enjoy everything about that game on Saturday. I really wanted you to take in the moment and enjoy it.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely did that. I definitely took it all in. I thought we had better relationship than that. You know, you can – yeah, it wouldn't have been a problem just to hit me with a good luck today.
So he – by the way, Rodney McLeod, if you're just joining us, if you've never heard Rodney before with us for whatever reason – he obviously plays for the Browns. He's retired at the end of the season. You knew he was retiring at the end of the season. And he's been joining us, and I wanted to make sure that he was good to go. But Lima has turned me off to texting people. Lima only allows me to text when it's necessary. And so I felt like I might be wasting your time by texting you. I was actually maybe going to text Nobles to tell you something. I swear to God, I'm like, I don't want to bother him. Because Lima just, he takes all, like, he's like, you don't need to bother these people.
Just put it in, in the game day prayer group message. Well, you know, by the way, Rod, here's a script for you. And, you know, Ken said good luck. He told me to tell you good luck today on your final game.
I texted Josh Gordon after his first career touchdown. Save your jokes, but I met him in a club, and he gave me his phone number.
Wow. What'd you guys do? You were in the same section?
We were in the same section. I texted him after his first touchdown. He responded, and then a bunch of stuff hit the fan, and I think I was like, well, I'll try one more time to text him, and obviously that number was no longer in use, and that was the hour he blocked me. Who knows? And that was no longer going to be we were not going to continue our relationship at that point.
How'd y'all end up in the same section? Where were you? Where was this at?
Anywho,
reckless speculation.
All right, so I'm gonna have to hit you with a couple of things that are a little bit more harder hitting than what I've hit you before, because you no longer play for the Browns, but you haven't
technically, like, not until the league year ends, right? That's like March 14, free agency, like something like that. So technically. You know, I am still, the roster still exists until that point.
Okay. Well, I'll be careful then. I don't want to get you in any trouble.
But has all the money been exhausted? Is there any chance you can get more out of this?
No.
They owe you any more.
It's locked in, but the payments continue to come in. You know, we're in a new system now and how we get paid.
So, oh.
Yeah.
Really? It doesn't just end this week?
No. It actually continues through.
I'll be dipped.
Yeah, over a course of, what, like 34, 6 weeks, something like that?
I should know these things, but I don't like digging through a man's pockets.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like that.
So Rodney McLeod joins us in studio. So how surreal was Saturday?
It was very surreal up until the point where we ran out as a team. And, you know, I do my trot. And I knew where, like, my family was seated because I got all the tickets. And it was, you know, right behind our bench area, kind of corner of the end zone. And I immediately see, you know, all of them kind of just, like, lock eyes from a distance with, like, every family member that, you know, had attended that game. And they had a sign for me. And, you know, all of just, man – probably not even 13 years, but however many years it's been that I've even, like, been on that grass and put a football in my hand from the age of six, like, just really came, like, just pouring in all of those emotions. And the reason why, like, I'm standing here today had a lot to do with, you know, every person that was represented in those stands. And is also the very reason why I've continued to play as long as I have, you know, for them. It's unfortunate my wife and daughter couldn't be there just because of the elements. Mm-hmm. Like, it was very bad. Like, my wife started to have FOMO. It was a plan. Like, we talked about it for weeks. Hey, look, you know, the game's probably not going to be ideal for you to come. We'll just monitor the weather as it's going on. It's not going to be good. Oh. We're just going to stay behind. It's fine. Days leading up to, she's like, you think I should do it? You think? So now we're trying to figure out, okay, is there a way we get a suite, mm-hmm. something like for her? It didn't work itself out, but man, thank God she didn't, because it was frigid. That was like unbearable.
Yeah.
I think for my family and even for us as players. But yeah, that was a great moment. Thing that carried through the national anthem, man, and just embraced it. I didn't know when it would hit me, but that was my moment that I had on Saturday.
A lot of opinions of the national anthem on Saturday. Did you hear the national anthem, Tone? As a country singer of some sort,
it seemed a
little more gravelly voice than some of the other ones. Not the worst rendition I had ever heard, for crying out loud, but certainly...
I get all my national anthem opinions at sporting events from Clay Travis, and if he didn't weigh in, I didn't really hear anything about it. What was it like leaving the field that very last time as you were walking out of there? Were you soaking it all in, or were you like, all right, time to shower up and get the hell out of here?
Honestly, I kind of kept things very normal. I connected with a few guys that I knew, some I didn't, who really congratulated me on an amazing career. And, you know, some guys, hey, man, I've been following you for a while. And, you know, much respect. So just people giving my flowers, and took a photo with a UVA alum, a guy I played with, former teammate, Brent Urban, who's with the Ravens, and proceeded to just show my fam some love and just walked off that field with my head high and a lot of accomplishments behind me, and just praising the man upstairs for everything.
Rodney McLeod in studio with us. So yesterday, Andrew Berry gives his end of the year speech, and as every NFL GM does when they talk about conducting their exit interviews. And I always wonder what really goes on. And I don't know, there's only so much you could say, but is it truly a collaborative thing? Do they ask players opinions about what happened that year, what was good, what was bad, the experience of being a Cleveland Brown? Does it ever come a time where you throw coaches and teammates under the bus too? Like, is that a normal part of these interactions?
Yeah, I think the exit interviews are just a moment to do some reflecting. And the reflecting can look a few different ways. It can be, of course, it starts probably with your individual performance, right? Like, how did you do, whether good, bad? And so you may stay on that subject for a little bit, back and forth, conversations take place. And then it could then expand to, all right, as a team, right? Like, what did we do well this year? What didn't we do well? Certain guys, you know, whether you're a veteran like myself or one of the leaders on the team, your opinion is important for leadership. And so those sort of conversations do happen. Then you have people in positions of, okay, like, where does this leave me after today, right? Free agency, you know, whether I'm looking for a contract extension. Like, so some of those small conversations, like, take place and I would say hint, right, into what does the future hold for you as that individual sitting in those rooms. And typically, you know, you're going to do your meetings with, of course, AB, ownership, your position group coach, and then more than likely the coordinator, and of course, the, you know, head coach being Kev. Those are probably the five that you're going to meet with in some way. More than likely, if you don't meet with all five, you're at least going to meet with three out of the five.
But, you said ownership.
Yeah, ownership takes place too. That that doesn't happen everywhere. To be honest, I've been in certain stops where ownership happens for selective members. Ownership happens for every single player. It just really depends on the organization and their style. And then, you know, you just you adapt. And you show up, right? You got a meeting, and you show up. 9 o'clock, I'm there at 9 o'clock. Really,
you talked to Jimmy?
I talked to Has.
Yeah. How long did that conversation go?
That was probably like 20 minutes.
Whoa.
It was a good conversation.
You just had a billionaire talk to you for a guy worth that much money talk to you, Rodney McLeod, for 20 minutes? Yeah. Most people do not get that opportunity in a lifetime.
Yeah, I've been in that seat a lot longer with previous organizations, Indianapolis specifically. I think I was in for like 45 minutes to an hour.
I bet that guy had a lot of things to say to you.
Well, it was his daughter. And she picked my brain a lot. She's fully invested in the team and the future of the Colts, of course. And I was very surprised. But, yeah, I was in there for like 45.
Now, the story came out over the weekend, Tone. I think Jonathan Jones had written a story about Shane Steichen, I think, is safe. But at least John's friend, Ballard, he might be up in the air. And they were like, yeah, his daughter has taken a firm grasp on the organization. Because I think Jim Irsay is maybe a little bit older than what guys like me realize there.
Yeah, like you'll see her often on the sidelines, headset, listening to everything. She's attending position meetings. She's taking the steps in order to put herself in position to be able to manage that team at some point.
So, boy, I tell you, if I owned the team, I don't think I would want to sit down with every player. I think I would want to sit down with veterans such as yourself, such as, you know, guys with Joel, Miles, guys like that.
You guys have been elsewhere, too.
Yeah. Comparing, contrasting things that we could have done better. Where the season may have gone off the rails, things that we could do to head that off from going off the rails, especially in a pivotal year next year for everybody involved. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think that's what I would do. I don't know if I would meet with everybody, though. That's something for me.
Yeah. But again, you know, every organization has its own formula in the way that they want to conduct their exit meetings. So, again, like I said, I've been a part where, you know, you see, many people meet with ownership, or you see as little as maybe, you know, two people meet with ownership. So, it's all part of the game, but it is a little uncomfortable at first when you sit down, or you know that meeting's awaiting, like ownership. Okay, like what is that going to look like? What are they going to ask me? So you're a little on edge, but Haslam's make it very comfortable. It was a very fruitful conversation and productive.
So how do you walk away from the Browns, your discussions with them? The season obviously wasn't what you wanted it to be, and just your overall experience as a Cleveland Brown. They do these player surveys all the time. I mean, you've been elsewhere too. You've been in other places. You've been in winning situations. I mean, what's your overall takeaway from this experience with the Browns? I think Browns fans would love to hear your thoughts on this.
I mean, honestly, for me, it's a blessing, for just to have a job. So I'm forever grateful for the opportunity to be able to showcase my talents here in Cleveland and be a part of a tremendous locker room. You know, people ask, you know, what are you going to miss most, or what are you going to take away from your experience here in Cleveland? And, you know, you instantly look at the people. And for me, the people that I've had the pleasure of serving and standing beside have been amazing, and nothing shy of that. Walk away with some great relationships that will continue to live outside of the locker rooms, and that's what it's about now in life. You know, as I enter, getting ready to turn 35, you know what I'm saying, in June, you really focus on the relationships that you formed. And I've been able to forge a lot of those over the course of 2 years. The fans here have been amazing. I feel like they match my soul, my heart. They're blue collar, hardworking, passionate, loyal. Sometimes, hey, they're going to speak their mind freely as they should and need to. But it's all coming from, a great place, I believe, at the end of the day. And it's unfortunate that I couldn't do the things that I wanted to do here. You know what I'm saying? When you step into any place, you want to leave your mark and your legacy. And last year, of course, we made the playoffs. Season was cut short for me, and I was really hoping that this would be the year that, you know, I could help bring the first to Cleveland, you know, similarly to what I did in Philly. But God had different plans, and you got to live with the outcome. A lot of lessons learned. Again, a lot of amazing things still took place, you know, despite the outcome of this season. So, again, man, to Cleveland, I appreciate it. And to everybody that, you know, played a part this year, we thank you. Salute.
Why is this going to get better, Rodney? I mean, we've been chewing the fat here for the last 48 hours on everything, the setback for Deshaun Watson. I think that fans are positively giddy about a chance to maybe get out of the contract and move on with the whole insurance thing. Maybe that's something you probably can't speak on right now. Maybe next spring or maybe next fall, summer, things like that. But, you know, 3-14, a lot of folks wanted their pound of flesh. Andrew spoke yesterday. Some people thought he was a little bit more forthcoming with some things, whatever. But I know that, you know, they're not going to be given very many chances coming up. Most people, when you're 3-14, mm-hmm. doesn't really go their way, and there's changes being made. How does this get better for Browns fans? Because this is, you've been here 2 years. This whole process really started in 2016
mm-hmm.
to where they're at now, and they got one playoff win and two appearances. One, God bless it with you. But how do I know that this is going to be better in 2025?
I personally think it'll be better simply because of the leaders that still exist in that locker room. And I believe they know what needs to take place and what has to get done. And what I think will ultimately happen, like anything in life, when you have a setback take place, it tends to ignite that fire that kind of lives inside of all of us because – you know, any competitor is going to respond. And I think for this team, I believe that, again, like, this would be a way to just fuel just that hunger, fuel a lot of shame, maybe, like, that we experienced this year and really store all of those receipts.
Mm-hmm.
You feel me? From media clippings to comments to everything that you know, people kind of voiced about the Browns this year. Put all of that together, and let's go out there and show the world differently. And I think that will be the motivator this year. You know, similarly to how I entered. Last year, you know, coming off, Browns seemed to be disrespected in a lot of ways. And that in itself kind of fueled us on top of, you know, new people, fresh faces in the building, you know, Jim Schwartz. Like, so there was a lot of excitement around all of that. But I really think that, yeah, it's unfortunate what took place this year, but we'll now channel that energy. They will channel that energy for good. For the betterment of the team, city, organization, and they'll get back on track. I honestly feel that way. Again, because of the men that live, that character that lives within that locker room, despite, again, what our record says, if you got the right men, then, again, you can get it done. I was on a team with Philly. We only won 4 games in 2020, and we turned around in 2021 under Nick Sirianni. But mm-hmm. a lot of the faces, the core leaders in that locker room still existed, and we were able to touch the playoffs. We lost to Tom Brady, but that was obviously a start for them in this new era to be able to push through. And what I'm saying is I feel like it was because of the core leadership that we had, and that, again, that brought us all together, anchored the troops, and then you know, push forth the right message and the right mindset in 21 that got us back into winning form.
Well, I got to admit something to you, Rodney. Like, a lot of people think that, you know, being media members, like, we want them to not win. It's better for your ratings. It's better for your cult. No, I don't think so. And, we've talked about it before, Anthony and I. Anthony's from here. I'm from here. I'm nervous. I've been mad before, and I think that's been expressed before. I'm nervous because I've seen Browns fans really, really mad. I haven't seen them apathetic, really. Mm. I've seen them check out 2016 and 2017. They checked out. And I think, honestly, Rodney, I hate to say it, but I think a lot of them checked out during this year. But I'm picking up a different vibe than I've heard in ever in my career here, my life here, where I've seen a lot of anger, a lot of vitriol. I've said it myself at times, but there's something that's changed and it scares me where it's like, hey, I can deal with fans being mad. That's fine. I've been mad. I can be mad at them. I just don't want nobody to not care about them. That's a tremendous difference to me. You know, and you will do this at some point if you want to. I mean, being behind a microphone, talking to fans every day. If they're mad, I'd like to talk them off the ledge. Mm. Sometimes you'd like to push them to it if you think it needs to come to that level with your sports teams. But I can't have apathy. Mm. I mean, these are supposed to be civic treasures, these teams. And I get very nervous about this, Rodney. So, like, you got to make me feel better about where this franchise is going. Because I don't want fans to have to go through this in the future because I think some are just going to wash their hands of it.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it's not my job. You know, feel me? Like, I don't know, what else to necessarily say. All I could do is speak how I feel, speak my truth. And hopefully that is settling for a lot of listeners and a lot of fans. But you got to let things just play its course, mm-hmm. Take its course over the next few months to see how, again, every person responds to the way this season ended. We all know there will be changes have already started to take place. You don't know who's going to be at what slots or pieces are going to all exist, but they ultimately are looking to put certain pieces together where at the end the puzzle will illustrate hopefully a championship.
Mm-hmm.
I think that is where everybody in that building is living right now. It's living in the moment, is looking to win now. And you're hearing it also from your core leaders, your cultural, your guys who identify the culture here in Cleveland, like Miles, and he's very expressive. And I think, management and everyone above him is in the same mindset where, again, we want to win now for not only us, but this city, because they deserve it.
How hard is it, Rodney, to overcome? You're on the defense, and 2 years ago, elite defense, and then the amazing Flacco run down the stretch to propel you guys to the playoffs. This year, you guys never, just quarterback-wise, really, this is just my perspective, really had to be hard to overcome. I know you can only do so much and worry about your side on defense, but now that it's all over, do you think that was maybe ultimately the thing that derailed the season? Was just the quarterback situation that you guys came into the season with?
No, I don't think that was the primary reason as to why we struggled this year. I'll just look at two things. We're speaking offensively first. It comes down to turnovers, right? Like, you had to protect the ball, and you can't give it away. We talk about, stats is what we live by in this industry, and for us, we have a large outcome of winning when we either tie or we're ahead in the turnover margin. Forget what the record is specifically, but it's like 30-6, let's just say, right, over our span under Kev. And so those are the things that ultimately are going to cost you, the game, and hurt you and put you in positions, you know, where now your percentages to win go down. If we're speaking defensively, things that we talk about, eliminating explosives. Explosives can happen whether in the passing game or in the run game. And I think this year as a defense, we had our lapses of giving up the big plays more than we needed, we should have, and put ourselves again in harm's way because of those. We would play stout, maybe, you know, 85, 90%, but then those other 10, very detrimental and hurtful. And so that is what I look at on both sides of the ball. It's like, how do you minimize the turnovers? They're going to happen at times, but got to be to a minimum. We have to – that ball is sacred. And then the second piece is defensively. Like, you can't allow teams to have those explosives, because explosives lead into touchdowns, extended drive, whatever it might be. And so those two things – I think we didn't do a good job at consistently throughout the year, and it showed.
But I just know that the teams like the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Bills, they can look at a stable quarterback situation, and then they can truly worry about what they do and try to play complementary football. You hear, you know, coaches all the time talk about that stuff. For you guys, it felt like you had to overcome the turnover situation consistently, and it's like next thing you know, defense has to be back on the field. And now, next thing you know, a very talented defense with a pretty good scheme is giving up these huge plays that you're talking about. I just feel like, this is just my opinion, feel like if you had one of those situations where you guys knew who that quarterback was and it was a stable situation from the get-go, it would allow you guys to just play the type of football I think you guys were able to play down the stretch, especially last year.
Yeah, I mean, we live in a world of no excuses, so, you know, whatever the job requires, that's what we're responsible for. And, you know, I think Coach Banda put it in, and he did a good illustration. It's similar to, what's that bill like? What's that tab at the end of the night? Like, you know, you had that night that you was out with Josh Gordon in the club, like, what'd that tab turn into? You know, at the end of the day, somebody got to pay it. And defensively, that's the world we live in. You know, most of the time, like, we have to pay the bill. We can't look for somebody else to get it done. Doesn't matter, short field, turnover on that, whatever it might be. Like, we got to just go out, pay it forward, and get it done. And so, yeah, we could talk about everything that the offensive may have done, but at the end of the day, like, what didn't we do? Because I've also seen, you know, some other defenses like this year kind of maybe one game or several games look very similar, you know, or put in the same similar position, but they were able to overcome, right? So how do we overcome some of those struggles, those unfortunate situations that we may have been presented with? How do we find a way to get ourselves out, keep us in it, rally the troops? Because that's what we talk about, setting the pace on defense. And yeah, so that's what it is.
Did you think you started a little bit behind the eight ball as the season started as a defense? Like, Jim Schwartz had mentioned something like that at the end of the preseason, where it's like, hey, you know, some of these guys, they really got to pick it up because the season's starting before it is, and it's not going to be just like it was last year.
From our performance standpoint, I would say that wasn't our best showing in week one. The way that we came out, you know, we expected a lot more of ourselves. Mm-hmm. We held ourselves to a very high standard. So I think he is right. Like, you know, we didn't get off to that start that we were all anticipating. And again, you know, our job is to set the pace, set the tone for the team. And if we need to hold a team to three, or to 0 points, we feel we have the right, we have the guys to do that. That's how we identify ourselves.
Yeah, we had a lot of expectations for this year. Coming up next, I want to see how your expectations were either met or not met when it came to us, and also want to know what you're going to do in the future here. Near future is near future, but like, what, you know, when training camp starts next year, What does Rodney McLeod do to keep himself occupied? Has he found his life's work, in the words of the late, great Chuck Knoll? Has he decided to do some other things? Does he decide to go into media? Does he decide to go into coaching or anything else? I want to know that when we come back. You know we're going to call you at some point about the draft, right?
Yeah.
And you're going to have to make a pick.
Change.
You're going to have to make a pick for the Browns. I'm not going to call
pick.
You.
I'll make a pick.
Yeah, I don't want to bother you about tweets and texts and things like that.
So I'm on the clock.
You guys start doing research.
I got to make a pick.
Not now. I don't need you to make a pick now.
No, yeah, but that's what you're going to call and say, like, we're on the clock.
By mid-February, we need you to have a draft plan laid out for
okay.
the Browns.
Yeah, you better.
All right. Just like the first pick or?
I don't need you to lay out all nine picks of what they're going to make. Yeah,
Lord. Mock draft. You want Rod's mock draft.
258.
It's Rodney McLeod, not Dane Brugler. Like it's okay. Yeah, I ain't gonna make you do that. But you know, like this is part of what changes now.
Yeah.
Like, are you gonna go through media? Are you gonna do media? What are you gonna do?
I have a few fillers out there. I'm kind of in a world of exploring right now. No pressure behind it. Just explore. See what you're passionate in. What opportunities live now outside of the helmet. And see where life takes me.
Are you prepared, as a guy who recently retired, are you prepared to say things that are critical of people you played with?
Yeah, I have no problem.
Because I've kind of taken it easy on you with some of the stuff.
I live by the code of all I can do is look at the film. The film doesn't lie. That's our resume. And so if what I see holds true, then that's what I have to voice. That's the world. That's the world I live in. And so that does mean being critical of others, like whether like, hey, this is a great player, but right here, you know what I'm saying? You didn't get, looks like you guys are not communicating well. So something happened right here, blown coverage, touchdown. Like, I'm sorry. That's what it is.
But you also
or
know
technique wise, doesn't like, matter.
We showed you a video. You may or may not remember this. We showed you a video during a break at the towards the beginning of the year, and it was like somebody about a blown coverage or something you had, and I said it for you. I mean, you were trying to be nice about it. This was off air, and I was like, oh, so they don't know their ass from a hole in the ground. And you're like, well, I'm like, yeah, this is what you want to say, but you're not going to say it.
Yeah.
Are you prepared to deal with that? Like texts from guys who you, because it's, for me, I never played. So it's easy.
No, it is.
Not
it
the
is
league.
Hard.
You know what I mean?
That is the most difficult piece about stepping into the world of media from as a former player is talking about, yes, guys that you have great relationships with. But I think what people will instantly see is that they know your heart. You know, like there's certain guys that are just there for clippings, for views. Whereas I look at as an OG like Ryan Clark, I mean, he just speaks from what he sees. And he's played ball for a very long time, high football IQ, a great leader, and he's well respected. And he always, you know what I'm saying, it's just he has the best intentions behind his messages and the way that he communicates, I feel like. Mm-hmm. Now, what you have to know is not everybody's going to like your soundbite. Like, there's going to be somebody that is critical of that on both sides of it. That's just inevitable in this industry. So you got to have thick skin, but you got to know that, and you got to trust in yourself. You got to know yourself. Don't be somebody that you're not. And I don't think I'll ever kind of confide in that.
So was this what you thought it was going to be?
This year?
With us. Not the season. I mean, in here and all this.
Yeah.
Be honest.
Yeah. It's been love. It's been love. You guys have treated me fair.
I think so.
You know, I know so. There's times that you guys could have probably got at me a little rougher than what you did, but yeah, I appreciate it.
But the things that we would have been rougher with you about is really things you That would have been general manager stuff, coaching stuff. Yeah. Like they, I can't ask you to answer those
questions. Our listeners just wanted to hear about Deshaun every week. They wanted to hear how the teammates of Deshaun feel about Deshaun. That's all they care about right now, especially when the season goes south.
Yeah.
Right? They want to know. And so I'll tee one up instead for the fans. What is the gap between Myles Garrett and TJ Watt? Let's go. Let's start it off.
The gap?
Post-career analysis.
Yeah, this is media.
Let's go make some headlines in Pittsburgh.
Get on Awful Announcing right now. Tell us how big the gap is between Myles Garrett and TJ Watt. Do it.
I mean, I can't give the proper analysis, to be honest with you. But all I know is Myles Defensive Player of the Year last year, and that speaks for itself.
Ronnie, I watched the last 7 Steeler games. I didn't hear T.J. Watt's name mentioned at all.
Nothing.
You're a guy actually looking at the film.
Nothing.
You're playing with Myles.
Yeah, I don't look at T.J. Watt film.
I'm forced to watch T.J. Watt film. Whether it be commercials, whether it be...
You feel me? Yeah, I'm not there yet, but I can vouch for Myles, like, hell of a player. And like I said, Defensive Player of the Year. Like, what else needs to be said? That's period.
Who's the most underrated Cleveland Brown?
Underrated Cleveland Brown?
Mm-hmm.
On the current roster right now, that's a tough one.
Do you think there's a guy that we are unnecessary? Well, you said you don't listen to a lot of anybody here.
That's a tough one.
Yeah, is there someone you think the fans might be a little bit hard on that we should lighten up on because they're better than what we think they are?
There's probably several players.
Yeah,
there's probably several players. I can't pinpoint one. I can't pinpoint one.
Fine. You got anything else for him?
I
love that
funny.
Man. He
y'all
set
funny.
You up perfectly.
Y'all funny.
Man, you got it. That's the difference. He's measured in his comments, and I'm just a wild man. Because if he sets me up for Myles Garrett, I'm gonna say it all day about how much better Myles Garrett is than T.J. Watt, just to inflame the passions of people in Pittsburgh.
Yeah. You got that's your job.
Yeah, but you're too responsible about it.
Who's the guy on the roster right now that we don't talk about a lot, but like 5 years from now they're gonna be?
Ooh, that's like a good one.
Up.
Yes,
they're gonna be the guy.
And assume guys get healthy because unfortunately they've had some injuries. You know the Mike Hall thing and Dwan Jones and the injuries have not helped again. JOK, I mean. Oh, we all want to see JOK again.
Yeah, I'm gonna list off just a few young guys that I could pinpoint. Mamu, 43, you know, linebacker, undrafted guy. I think you'll talk about him a lot more going forward. Fantasy set, Cedric Tillman. I had a real breakout year. Looking forward to seeing more from him.
Where did that nickname come
confidence.
From? Really?
Oh, that's just like my nickname I gave to him. Because like, it was like all of a sudden, just touchdown, raining touchdown. So I said, hey, fantasy said.
Andrew Berry's laser eyes, anybody? Andrew Berry laser eyes? You'll learn more about that as you get more into me.
Nah, I'm hip. I'm hip. Isaiah McGuire really showed up for us. Big.
He was nice.
Down the stretch, a lot of turnovers, and I think he'll continue to mature into to a great player.
Andrew Berry, laser eyes again, nicely done, bingo.
And I like my dog Elijah. You know, he's had a tough, I think, start to his career as far as like bouncing around. But I believe whether it's here in Cleveland. Or somewhere where he's, of course, on a team for a long-term, consistent basis. I think he has a skill set and abilities to be a great player for someone.
What's your Super Bowl prediction?
Super Bowl prediction. Ooh, we in that mode, huh? And playoffs is tomorrow. Nah, but I like. It's hard to walk away from Mahomes. Kelsey, Andy
Reid.
They're
not going to win it every year. Mahomes is going to win it every year.
But I think they probably represent AFC. And NFC, I'm going to go with... I'm going to say that I believe it might be a year for Detroit, man.
I think everybody's off Minnesota now. They've had a lot of hurt.
They've had
one game and they're off. Yeah. They've lost, what, three games all year. They're done with Minnesota.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean anything. They're ready. They're prepped. You know what I'm saying? They just crushed, dominated Minnesota. Whereas it didn't get to that point until the end of the game. I think fourth quarter, they just pulled away. But I think they're built to win that.
If Kevin calls you next November, are you coming back?
Calls me next November?
November.
Yeah, guys are down. Oh, playoff run.
Maybe December.
So you're not saying no?
Maybe like December. I told her, like, hey, look, if you guys are making that run, numbers the same, need somebody to give some pregame speeches.
He stayed in shape.
You know, leadership on the team. I got you. Couple third down. I got you. I'm your guy.
Ronnie, we thank you so much for the time. It's been a pleasure. An honor and a pleasure.